Everything, she said. Uncle Adam said if I wanted to know all that, I had to ask you. I asked him, was there secret stuff? Was that why I had to get it from you? And he said it wasn't because it was secret. It was because it was special. Really special. Riley thought for a moment. It was, she said. She was the first friend I had here. We were nine. Riley told her daughter all the details, from 9 to 19, and Maddie understood it all because she had best friends. The laughter, the fights, the trouble, the way they'd always helped each other through dark times. Although it was frightening, Riley also told about the end. She didn't quote Emma or herself, but she admitted there were hateful things said. Mom, Maddie said. Mom, you're crying. Riley wiped at her cheeks. I didn't realize, she said. I didn't think it was still so real. It was such a hard thing. And then there was you, and you made it all worth it. Because I had you, my regrets were gone. I was sorry I hurt her, though. And I said so. I really did. Is she still mad? Maddie asked. Riley shrugged. I don't think so. We haven't had that talk. We nibbled around the edges of it. She said she got over it a long time ago, and I said that I'd begged her to forgive me, and she never did. But then we left it without a real talk. Are you going to? I'm her boss now, so I don't know, Riley said. You better, Maddie said. Know why? Because I don't think I've ever seen you cry before. Oh, Maddie, I've cried so much. Not around me, she said. And you know what? You're more real when you cry. Chapter 12. Emma had to concentrate very hard just to keep up with the rest of her team, so for the first 2 weeks in her new job, she saw very little besides the dust and dirt she was waging war on. It wasn't just important that she be flawlessly thorough, but also fast. Clients had an expectation of not only a perfect job, but an on-time job, too. In most of the houses, no one was home, and it was usually planned that way. People didn't like being underfoot while the house was being cleaned. Nick came by a couple of times as she was working to check on her. He was a happy and energetic guy in his early 30s, and two things were immediately clear. All the women liked him, and he had eyes only for McKenna. He joked with her, complimented her, asked her a lot of questions, but she kept moving and gave him mostly short answers. Emma was amused by the way she tried to ignore him. McKenna was much friendlier with the women, though she was their superior. If Emma knew her better, she might tease her, but she really didn't dare. In fact, there wasn't much she dared. She very much wanted to prove she could clean as well as she could supervise a household staff. That first week, she didn't notice much, but there was one thing that drew her attention. The trash in the wastebasket of a 15-year-old girl. It appeared she'd thrown away some clothing. Emma didn't mean to inspect her trash, but she couldn't help but notice the price tag still on the clothes. She pulled them out. 2 pair of pants, 3 tops, a scarf, a blazer, all stuffed into the trash can. A wad of gum was stuck to a brand-new Free People long-sleeve knit top that sold for $85. There were designer labels on the other items. Prada, BCBG, Christian Lacroix. She smoothed the clothes out on the girl's bed. What are you doing? McKenna asked. She must have made a mistake, Emma said. She threw away brand-new, very expensive clothing. These still have the tags on. It's not a mistake, McKenna said. They're in the trash. But, and please don't talk to Deli about the clothes in the trash. Deli has 3 daughters, no spousal support, and seeing this careless treatment would be hard on her heart. Emma frowned. But why? Because her ex is an asshole. Why else? No, why are these things in the trash? Some of that stuff we don't see, Emma. Her parents are never around. Her mother's assistant buys the clothes. Bethany doesn't want them. In fact, she resents them and does it out of spite. But they can't end up on an employee's daughter. Who knows how much trouble that could create? Shouldn't her mother know? Do you know her mother? McKenna asked, lifting her dark brows. Well, no, but if I... Don't project. Don't extrapolate. Telling her mother might only create bigger problems for us. How? She'll fire us and hire a new service merely because we look too closely and presume to know more about her family than she does. Trust me. Or, to keep from getting in trouble with her mother, sweet little Bethany will claim we stole the clothes. Doesn't she care? Emma asked McKenna. I don't know. And neither do you. And with that, McKenna stuffed the beautiful clothes back into the trash can and handed it to Emma. Emma did as she was supposed to do and emptied that trash can into the big plastic bag she was carrying from room to room. She so hoped she'd see some of those expensive new things on a homeless person. If she were mine, I'm sure you'd care enough to take her shopping, listen to her likes and dislikes, and be a perfect mother. Congratulations to you. I bet there are some homeless people who'd like to know where the best trash cans are, she muttered when she was out of McKenna's earshot. She didn't say another word, but she could begin to see how you could become hard, cynical. If the dirt the clients left behind wasn't enough to turn you, the private lives they thought no one could see might. We need to be invisible, McKenna reminded her. We can't afford to be enmeshed with the client. It's not good for business. Emma was surprised no exposé had been written by a member of her Manhattan household staff. Had she and Richard been more clever in concealing how obscene their private lives were? Looking back, she thought she'd been a very decent mistress of the house, but it was true. She didn't remember the names of all the people who served them. She knew the housekeeper, the driver, the cook, her part-time assistant. The cleaning people changed regularly. The florist's delivery people were always different. She'd had 7 different personal shoppers in 5 years. They had been invisible to her. At the end of the second week on Friday afternoon, she went with McKenna back to the office to pick up her car. Here's your schedule for next week. Meet your team here. You can take a van to your appointments. And Riley asked me to tell you she'd like to see you if you have some time. She was the boss. How could Emma not have time? When she got up to the second floor, Jeanette was gone for the day and Riley's door was ajar. There was laughter coming from inside. Emma tapped lightly. Come in, Riley called. Well, you look pretty decent for a Friday night.
I do?
You do, she laughed. Emma, this is Brazil Johnson, our accountant and CFO. We go way back. Brazil, this is Emma Shea, and we go back even further. We first met in 4th grade. Brazil, a tall, lanky African-American woman in jeans and crisp blouse with a scarf tied around her head, stood and put out a hand. Emma, she said. I like that. Emma, is it short for anything? Emma shook her head. No, and I wasn't named for anyone that I know of. I used to clean houses with Brazil, Riley said. We were almost the original team.
I'm happy to meet you, Emma said.
Come in and sit, Riley invited. Brazil isn't around the office too much, and when she is, I like to take advantage of her stories.
My mother is an invalid now, Brazil explained. I work from home as often as I can, so I'm there for her. Most days she drives me out of my mind. But it's very good practice for me. Might make me conscious of what it's like and keep me from burdening my daughter with the same.
She shook her head.
Woo-wee! Denise wouldn't put up with a tenth of what Mama gives me.
Denise is an attorney, Riley said. Also a single mother. So many of us.
Do you have children? Brazil asked Emma.
No,
she said, shaking her head. It's just me.
Well, your old friend Riley has created a company that welcomes single parents and makes it easy for them to work at a decent wage. She should get a medal.
I'm thinking a statue in the town square, Riley said with a laugh. How's work going? Any problems or revelations?
Emma was a little uncertain. She bit her lip for a moment.
Work is fine. Is there a suggestion box around here?
Riley's eyebrows were raised in question.
You have a suggestion already?
Just a thought, Emma said with some trepidation. I understand why it's a bad idea to accept used clothing from clients.
It can be disastrous, Riley said. I was wondering if it was managed and there was a receipt from the donor so there wouldn't be any misunderstanding. I don't think it's a good idea to have our clients think we're needy, Emma.
I understand, but the client doesn't have to know where donated clothing goes. In fact, we could send out a notice to clients saying that if they choose to donate to a variety of worthwhile outlets, from shelters to Dress for Success organizations that help to clothe people for job interviews,
the clothes you were forced to throw away wouldn't have made it into donation, Emma, Riley said. That screwed-up 15-year-old girl's clothes wouldn't have been donated. She was making a statement when she put them in the garbage.
You know about that, huh? Emma said.
There's very little I don't hear about, Riley said. I'm sorry, Emma. I think it's a bad idea.
If someone came to you and said, "Would you like to donate these nice clothes?" what would you think? Brazil asked. You'd think, "Why's that cleaning woman picking through my trash?" That's what.
Our clients want to think their cleaners don't need charity. They like thinking we don't see their cast-offs, that we don't notice things like that.
Tempting, though, ain't it? Brazil said.
It is, Emma said.
Look the other way, Emma, Riley said.
Anything else on your mind?
She shook her head.
I'm glad it's going well for you. McKenna tells me you're doing a very good job.
Thank you, she said. The team does a very good job.
They're good girls. Women. That's all I have for you, Riley said. I just wanted to check in with you. And here's your check, she added, handing Emma an envelope. From now on, Brazil will have your pay deposited in your account, and Nick will give you the stub showing your deductions. Welcome aboard.
Thanks, she said, and took her leave.
Emma had been in touch with Adam every day without fail. On those few nights they weren't together, they talked on the phone. Tonight Emma was going to Adam's house for dinner. When she was there, which had only been twice so far, she put her car in his garage so that if Riley drove by, she wouldn't see it. When she arrived, he was busy in the kitchen, slicing and dicing, garlic being sautéed in the pan on the stove.
It already smells wonderful. I have something to tell you, he said. My mother asked me if I happened to have a phone number for you. She's planning to call you. I gave her the number. I hope you're okay with that.
Will she tell Riley? Emma asked.
You can ask her not to, Emma. I don't think Riley finding out we're seeing each other will be as much of a problem as you think.
It'll be a problem for her, I guarantee it.
I hope you're wrong, but we'll do things your way. My mother wants to see you. She knows Riley has your number, and she didn't ask her.
I don't know what's going to piss her off more, us being together or hiding it from her. Every time Emma's phone rang, she jumped. She looked at the caller ID, and it was either Adam or Lyle. Then, on Wednesday, while she was working, her phone vibrated in her pocket and she didn't dare answer it, even though the homeowners weren't home. When they took their break between houses, she listened to the message.
Emma? It's June Kerrigan. Adam gave me your number, and I've been looking for a time I could ask you to dinner when it would be just us so we could talk.
Catch up with no interference from eavesdroppers or others. Maddie is having a sleepover Friday night, so her mother will have to stay home with them. How I got out of sleepover duty, I'll never know. But finally, the house is my own. Can you come to dinner? At about 6? When you were a little girl, you loved my fried spaghetti. It was your favorite, and your little feelings were hurt if we had it without you. If I make fried spaghetti, will you come? I think I've waited long enough. Tears came to her eyes, and she sniffed loudly enough that Shauna turned from the front seat and asked, "You okay, girl?" "Yes, sorry. I just got the sweetest message from an old friend."
"Is it your birthday or something?" Shauna asked.
"No," she said, laughing. "She's gonna make my favorite dish from when I was a little girl. Fried spaghetti with pesto, black olives, and pepperoni."
And both women oohed and aahed.
On Friday afternoon, immediately after work, she went to the flower shop. She'd called Lyle and asked him if he'd make a Christmas centerpiece for her to give to someone special. When she got to the flower shop, the guys were both there. With the holidays upon them, they were keeping the shop open a little later, and Lyle hadn't gotten around to her centerpiece.
"Who's getting my masterpiece?" Lyle asked.
"You have to promise not to tell," she said. "June called me and invited me to dinner, just the two of us. Adam gave her my cell number."
"Adam?" Lyle and Ethan said in unison.
"Yes, Adam. And you have to keep him a secret, too. It started out that he was a very nice and helpful friend. You know, a little glass of wine, a cell number in case I needed a hand with anything, lunch at a vineyard bistro. Then..."
They were leaning toward her.
"Then..." "It got a little, you know, romantic."
"OMG, she's doing Adam the love of my life," Ethan said, swooning into Lyle.
"Get a grip," Lyle said. "He's straighter than my hair." "He actually is," Emma said. "Could you get on my page here? I'm reuniting with June tonight, and I need a centerpiece. A lovely centerpiece. One that says, 'I'm grateful for everything, for accepting me without questioning about Richard's crimes, for missing me, for welcoming me back, for still loving me.'"
"I've had a crush on Adam since the first day I met him," Ethan said.
She looked at Lyle. "What's going on here? Is Adam his hall pass?"
"It's completely meaningless," Lyle said. "Adam couldn't be less interested in Ethan. Come on back to the playroom, Emmy. You can supervise my creation."
"I'd love that," she said.
"And why are we keeping Adam and June secret?" Lyle asked.
"Riley is my boss, and until Riley invites me to join her and the family, I'm staying back. She's keeping me at arm's length. Maybe someday, but not someday soon. But I so miss June."
"Understandable. Take your time, and tell me all about the job," he said.
"I told you," she said, finding a seat on a stool.
"Not really," he said, digging around for the tools of his profession. "Clippers, tape, scissors, foam, wire." "You did some groaning and whining about how exhausted you were, but no details."
"We're not supposed to talk about details. The client, I'm told, has an expectation of privacy."
"You aren't supposed to name them, Emmy, but you can tell tales to a person you can trust."
"That's me," he grinned. Then he stepped into the refrigerator and gathered up some stems, fern, and baby's breath.
"What's it like?"
"It's the hardest work I've ever done. And remember, I helped decorate a 70,000-square-foot department store for holidays. On my feet, lifting and hauling and climbing for 16 hours a day. I was a lot younger then, too. It's the hardest I've worked, and I'm learning that to work for Riley is to get the best pay available for cleaners. Apparently, clients cancel their contracts all the time and get cheaper cleaners, but because Riley and her two bulldogs, McKenna and Nick, keep everyone's standards really high,
They end up returning and paying the money to get the good work.
We do good work, she said, giving her head a shake. Wow, do we do good work.
And fast. I am appalled to note that there are so many jobs that pay better and have far less impact on the quality of life for a family.
Families, she added.
You get a feeling for what family life is like in a house right away. Which homes are run by the kids who have every possession imaginable, and others that don't even have family games.
There are houses we clean where the wife hovers and inspects and says, my husband likes it this way or that way.
And houses I've cleaned 4 times and have yet to meet a homeowner.
You can pick out their nesting spot right away. The places that are used. A favorite chair, desk in the office, bathroom counter.
We have one client who lies on the sofa watching TV until we get to that room. Then she shifts to the bedroom. She eats all day, and I've never seen her dressed in anything but loungewear. Some kids' rooms have awards and pennants and group pictures. Some show no sign of any siblings or friendships or group activities. Some children's rooms are very, very sad.
What makes a sad room?
He asked, while he laid out a sheet of paper, placing baby's breath on it. The little ball inside the spray paint can bounced when Lyle shook it, and with a quick, deft hand, he painted the baby's breath red.
That's amazing, what you just did there, she said. Christmas colors. What's a sad room?
Well, there's a teenager's room that's so pristine, it hurts. It's like a ghost room, but someone lives in it. There's evidence of living. Trash in the bin, books moved, linens slept in, laundry in the hamper, towels in the bath have been used. When I moved the desk blotter to dust, I saw something carved in the wood. Something her mother would never see because her mother works long hours and doesn't clean or look at her daughter's things. She carved, I miss her every day.
I assume she carved it. They're rich. They wouldn't have purchased a damaged piece of furniture.
Wow, Lyle said, stopping his arranging.
Who do you think?
I don't know, Emma said.
Could be a sibling. There are no other children's rooms or family pictures anywhere. Maybe a friend? Grandmother?
I have no idea. And you know what else, Lyle? I never realized this when I had help of my own, but I realize it now. We're invisible. I always thought of myself as very tidy, but now I wonder if I prepared for the cleaning staff. Did I wipe the bathroom mirror? Clean the sink? Flush? Because now I see that some people don't.
Ew, he said. I certainly know I do those things.
I think I did. I hope I did. But a hard truth for me is I don't know the names of the ladies who cleaned our apartment. They changed regularly. But still.
My God. You're learning volumes about yourself, about people you don't know.
It's humbling, she said.
Are you humbled by who you are or who you were?
Both, she said. She was so nervous, anxious and nervous. She carried her centerpiece up the walk to June's front door and knocked. The door opened immediately, and there she stood. Looking only a little older.
Emma, at last,
June cried, embracing her at once. Emma was left to balance the centerpiece in one hand and return the hug with the other.
How I've missed you, June said.
I thought of you, prayed for you, hoped you'd come back to us. It's been so long. Emma closed her eyes against tears. June's skin on her cheek was so soft, just as she remembered. She smelled faintly of ivory soap, something so basic, clean and memorable. And she could smell clean sheets. June used to iron the pillowcases, and the smell of hot linen that filled the room gave Emma such comfort. The arms that held her were the same, just strong enough, but not overwhelming. June knew just how to cradle a person.
June, she whispered.
June backed away a bit and looked at her.
You've held up so well, she said, wiping Emma's cheeks with her thumb. Shall we stand here in the doorway and cry, or will you come in?
I've been so excited and so nervous, Emma said.
Now stop that, June said with a little laugh. From the very first day we knew each other, we knew we'd be friends. Close friends.
This is for you, Emma said.
Ah, our Lyle hasn't lost his touch at all, has he? He's getting even better. Thank you. It's so beautiful.
Come in. Come in.
There was a small noise, a little whine, and Emma looked down to see the oddest-looking dog. Emma, this is Beatrice. She's staying with me for a while until she can recover from her last owner. She's a rescue, and I'm afraid she was quite mistreated. I'm a foster mother for the animal shelter. Beatrice was once very beautiful and will be again after a little love and attention.
She's so sweet, Emma said, reaching out.
But Beatrice just skittered away, going back to her bed in the kitchen. She usually needs a little time to get used to new faces, new smells. June carried the centerpiece into the kitchen where she had the table set with two places, candles and wine glasses. She put the flowers in the middle.
Speaking of new smells, I haven't had fried spaghetti in so long. Since I was last at your house, I think.
It's ready and in the warmer, June said. We're going to light the candles, have a glass of wine, and just talk for a while. Are you starving? I made us some crab rolls, just a little snack.
June busied herself getting the rolls, the wine, lighting the candles. Then she sat down in the place next to Emma. She lifted her glass.
To your return, darling Emma.
Emma burst into tears.
It took her a moment and a couple of napkins to compose herself.
June was the nearest thing to a mother she'd had, and whether she'd admitted it to herself or not, she'd been afraid she'd never be reunited with her.
Riley might not be okay with our private party, Emma finally said with a hiccup of emotion.
Well, Riley's stubborn sometimes, but that's all right. Her pride and stubbornness probably got her through the tough times.
She's a good woman.
She's also logical and usually comes around eventually. And I haven't mentioned this to her, but not because I'm keeping secrets. Because she'd want to be here. And we need this time. I want you to tell me everything.
Oh, June, you don't want to.
Yes. Yes, I do. We always had the most important talks. About the hardest things, too.
Tell me, Emma. Did you love him? She asked in a soft voice.
I did,
she said in a whisper.
I thought I was the luckiest girl in the world. In the universe. Richard was sophisticated and smart. He treated me as if I was some kind of precious gift. I loved him. I didn't think he was capable of doing anything terrible, of hurting people.
She shook her head.
A couple of times I was selfish or demanding or complaining, and he would just frown and say, Emma,
Emma, this childish behavior doesn't suit your image at all. Don't you know how powerful you are? How many people watch you?
If I asked for something, he would just say, of course. I thought he was kind. A few times I overheard him say things that were mean or harsh, and if I questioned him, he'd say he was sorry I had to hear that. That sometimes in business he had to be strong, firm.
Things like what, Emma?
Once I heard him on the phone saying something like, that old bastard doesn't know what to do with his money anyway. He'll never miss it.
Push on him a little bit harder, and if you need me to, I'll call on him.
When I questioned him, he said one of his clients was questioning his investment strategy. That he'd brought in more money in 6 months than the client's last broker had brought in over 6 years. And, of course, he was sorry I'd seen him in such a negative light.
June, he was so nice. Everyone loved Richard.
You never knew what was happening, June said.
But I did,
she said in a secretive whisper.
I wouldn't let myself believe it. He had this PR person, Andrea. She'd worked with him for a long time before we got married. If he was having a relationship with her, why would he marry me? But they were together often. Sometimes she traveled with us, sometimes with him. It was work. But I saw looks between them, reckless, steamy looks. So I asked my husband, was he involved with Andrea? And he did what he did best. He calmed my worries, reassured me, said that was absurd. And later, much later, I learned Andrea was his mistress all along. Andrea was the one to tell him, it's time to marry for your image.
I wonder if he married me because I was too stupid to see what was in front of my face.
No, no, June said.
He must have been that good at fooling people.
But I let him fool me.
What happened, Emma? What caused it to unravel?
The perfect storm. A couple of big clients didn't get good returns on their money and pulled out. There were flaws in the statements. Rich people have lots of CPAs running around, double-checking everything, and Richard made a few mistakes. Not mistakes, irregularities. There was a banking and investment corporation crisis, and people were pulling their money out everywhere. No one wanted to be the last one holding the bag. Richard's funds weren't insured or guaranteed. People were losing money everywhere else, but not with Richard. Investments across the board were crashing like crazy, but not Richard's. A reporter from the Washington Post started sniffing around. Angry and paranoid investors complained to the SEC. An investigation began. She shrugged helplessly. And I began to see a whole new Richard.
Oh, Emma.
Was it terrible?
It was terrible, she said.
Want to know why I stayed? Why I went to court? Because it was the only way I was going to find out the truth. He wasn't going to tell me. I was making assumptions. I was guessing. I was reading the papers, financial journals, watching the news, and they got so many facts about me wrong. I couldn't be sure they were getting facts about him right. But at the trial, there was evidence. I wanted to know who he was and what he'd done. I probably should have left, but I wanted to know.
June straightened.
That's what I would have done.
You would?
Absolutely. Ignorance isn't really a happy place. It just seems like it for a while. I would have wanted to know.
He thought he was a god, June, she whispered.
He thought he could do anything to anyone, that he was the most important person alive. He used people, lied to people, laughed at them.
Emma, what was it like to be rich? She asked.
It was isolating, Emma said.
Most of the time I felt like I was just visiting my own life. Then I'd remember, I was hired to play a part, the part of the great Richard Compton's wife. I'd always wonder how many others were pretending to be who they were. When you have a big pile of money, it should mean security, safety. It didn't. All our friends were rich, and they worried about having the most, spending the most, trying to figure out how it could make them the best. They trusted no one.
You know that silly saying? he who dies with the most toys wins? I think for a lot of people it's actually true. For a little while, were you happy? Did you think you'd been crowned?
Looking back, not for very long. 2 days into our honeymoon, Richard got a phone call that sent him hurrying off to Dubai, and he couldn't take me. It was business. He worked long days, had business dinners, business trips. I was like a happy little girl whose daddy had finally come home when he spent an evening at home. He took employees along on vacations. He never rested. June, I loved him because I didn't know him. I didn't know him at all. By the time he was convicted, I wondered how I'd been so easily duped. How I managed to stay blind. That's the part I don't get. How can I ever trust myself again?
Chapter 13. Emma and June talked for hours, talked over dinner and then a cup of coffee. It reminded Emma of those times when she was a girl and she had issues or heartaches, and she and Riley would sit on June's bed and talk it all out. When her father died and her stepmother and sisters weren't very comforting, June was there. Then it was worse when Rosemary remarried less than a year later, bringing home a man they didn't even know. A creepy man who made Emma so uncomfortable just by the way he looked at her. She was always at Riley's house, and Rosemary didn't miss her at all. And June was constant, always there for her, no matter how tired she might have been. Even when Emma and Riley fell out, June wrote Emma a lovely letter saying she hoped one day they could make amends. But no matter, June would always love her like a daughter. "You are the daughter of my heart, Emma. And no matter what happens, I will always embrace you. If you need me, just call me." It was 10 o'clock when June nearly pushed her out the door. "I'm afraid to leave," Emma said. "I don't know when we'll ever have another chance to do this. To talk like this."
"There will be many chances, Emma. I promise. Maybe you'll invite me to your little house."
The second the cold night air hit her face, Emma realized she was emotionally exhausted, wrung out. She was glad Adam's house wasn't too far away. She was so happy he invited her back tonight. She hadn't packed a bag or anything, but she was going to impose on him, steal one of his t-shirts, and curl up next to his big, warm body and sleep forever. Maybe till Sunday.
Emma?
She nearly jumped out of her skin at the sound of a man's voice. She shrieked and crossed her arms over her chest.
"Oh, Jesus. Sorry. I didn't mean to scare you."
"What are you doing here?" she asked, panting a little out of fear as who should come out of the shadows but Jock.
I was waiting for you. I thought maybe we could talk. Just for a few minutes."
"About what? And why are you waiting around here in the dark? How did you know where I'd be? Are you following me, Jock?"
"Oh, hell no, Emma. Maddie told me you'd be visiting June tonight. In fact, I think Maddie helped plan it."
"Huh? What are you talking about?"
"Maddie and her grandmother," Jock said. "You gotta watch those two. They're co-conspirators."
He rubbed his hands together and stomped his feet, freezing. "Why didn't you just call me?" she asked.
"Because Maddie didn't have your number, and I wasn't going to ask Adam or Riley."
He snorted with laughter.
"Oh, that would be interesting. Like either of them need another reason to be pissed off at me."
He blew on his hands.
"Hey, could we just sit in the car for a few minutes? I won't take too much of your time."
"Why didn't you just tell Lyle you wanted to talk to me?"
"Because he might not have given you the message, and even if he had, you might not have wanted to talk to me." "Come on, Emma. It took me forever to get up my nerve. And I'm freezing."
"Have you been waiting outside all this time?"
"I didn't think you'd be in there so long. And I didn't want to miss you. Look, I only want to apologize. Explain and apologize."
She shifted her weight to the right foot.
I don't know if that's wise, getting into the car with you, late at night, isolated like... He laughed.
Seriously? You think I'd hurt you? When did I ever hurt anyone, huh, Emma? My little girl told me where you'd be tonight. You think I'd do that to my little girl?
For the love of... all right, but hurry up. I'm so tired I could lie down in the street right here and fall asleep.
He put his hand on her elbow to steer her toward his SUV.
I know I'm a fuck-up, but I thought this was the right thing, he said, handing her into the car.
He went around to the driver's side and got in. He started the car for heat and rubbed his hands together.
So, Emma, this isn't going to come as news to you. I cheated on you.
Emma couldn't help herself.
A short burst of laughter escaped her. Then another laugh and another, until she had to put a hand over her mouth.
I didn't think it was that funny, Jock said.
I might be feeling a little emotional, she said, wiping tears of laughter off her cheeks.
I know, Jock. You were slightly unfaithful. Your daughter is now 15.
Well, I pretty much screwed up everything. I'm sorry I hurt you.
What about Riley?
I'm sorry I hurt her, too. But what I'm really sorry about is that I didn't get my shit together in time to be a real father to Maddie. I mean, I'm a real father, don't get me wrong. I'm crazy proud of that girl. She really did get the best of me and Riley. She's beautiful and smart as her mother. She's fun and athletic. She's gonna set the world on fire. I don't know what she's gonna do. I bet a doctor or a scientist or something. If I'd done the right thing fast enough, we'd be together. But hell, I was a stupid kid. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how I felt. Plus, even if I did know, I couldn't put it into words. Or actions.
No, Jock, Emma said, shaking her head. We wouldn't be together. It didn't take me very long to come to that conclusion. We were falling apart right away. We were too young to hold together a long distance. Not you and me, Emma. Me and Riley and Maddie.
It's my fault. I get that. I didn't step up like I should have. To tell the truth, it scared me to death. I had a part-time job at a gym, for God's sake. I mostly picked up towels, wiped down equipment, showed people how to use the weights, checked IDs, and got to work out for free. And that was right before I got a part-time job at the store, in shipping. I was in school, showing everyone how stupid I was, mostly. When Riley said we should tell you, I couldn't face it. Couldn't face you. Couldn't face her family. You know how tight they are. Sheesh. So I was too late. When I did go back to her and suggest we get married, she told me to go to hell.
He shrugged.
Can't say I blame her. But I never got another chance.
Emma was a little stunned.
You cared about her?
Of course I did. What do you think? Okay, I was an idiot and I thought maybe me and Riley would be friends with benefits for a while till I was ready, you know? But I was 18. And let me tell you about those Kerrigans.
He whistled.
You don't have 5 minutes to think with them. Know what I'm saying? Riley's grandpa went straight to my dad and threatened to lock me up for what? I don't know. We were over 18. Adam cold-cocked me and told me to never set foot near his sister again or he'd kill me. Riley? Riley said I'd ruined her life, caused her to lose her best friend, and I'd be lucky if she ever even let me see my child. And you never came back. I was so screwed. I couldn't win.
Emma was frowning.
You really cared about her?
I was a little slow, okay? I admit it. I didn't speak up fast enough.
And Maddie told you where to find me tonight?
What does Maddie know about it?
Everything, Jock said.
His expression was composed and confident.
She tilted her head to look at him. He hadn't changed too much, actually. His hair was still a little shaggy, but he had that handsome square jaw, pretty blue eyes, and brows a little thick and bushy. And the lashes. Whew, girls would sell their mothers for some of those lashes.
Everything? Emma asked.
I'm real close with Maddie. Of course, Maddie's real close with everyone.
She's got a kind of gift.
She knows how to make people feel okay about themselves. I told Maddie the truth a long time ago. I told her her mama was embarrassed about it all, maybe still upset about it. And I told her it was my fault, because it was. But I wanted her to know. I really cared about her mom.
But, Jock, you didn't even go to the hospital when she was born.
Yes, I did. I just waited for the Kerrigan clan to clear out. No point in getting my blood all over the maternity ward. But I went. I went a lot. The nurses knew the family was pissed. They let me in after hours. And I snuck over to her house when Adam and Riley weren't around. Took me a year to get Maddie to my house so my mom could fuss over her. In the end, Riley's fair. Plus, there was June. June put a stop to all the fighting and stuff, for Maddie's sake.
Well, Emma said, you didn't carry a torch long, did you? You got married, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm so brilliant. That was me showing just how smart I am. Maddie was around 10 or so, and I figured Riley had no reason to hold off on us getting together. I thought it all through. I'd been helping with Maddie, keeping her sometimes, giving Riley whatever I could for support. I know it wasn't much, but I didn't have much of a job back then. So I worked it all out in my head and ran it by Riley. We could be a family. Something about the way I did it really pissed her off. I mean, really pissed her off. She said, in your dreams, Jock. So I did the most rational thing I could think of. I married this woman I worked with. She had two kids. She was crazy about me. I wanted to have a home. It didn't take me long after Riley shut me down to realize once I grew up a little bit, I wanted to be a family man. Turns out she wasn't crazy about me for long. But you know me, Emma. I'm such an idiot, I think there was a part of me that was going to show Riley. See? Someone wants me. I actually thought Riley might be a little jealous. So trust me, I learned my lesson.
My God! You have to tell her all this, Jock. You should tell Riley you screwed up when you were 18, but you really care about her.
Nah, that ship has sailed,
he said.
I'm not good enough for her anyway. You know how smart she is. I'm just lucky we don't fight anymore. We get along okay. Maddie's happy. Maddie. She's incredible. You know Maddie's even proud of me? Me. I don't do much to brag about, but I play some mean softball, and Maddie comes to my games. All my friends and their families know her. He laughed. Riley even came to a game once. She laughed like her pants were on fire, but hell, she did come.
You used to play some serious football, as I recall, Emma said, her voice soft.
Only for fun after high school, he said. I've been with Mackey's Electronics for a long time, and they do all right now. To tell the truth, I do better than all right. I have the management of a store. I have a mortgage, a house, and a mortgage. Riley won't take support money anymore, so she said just put some aside for Maddie for college. I'm sure Riley thinks I just ignored her, but I didn't. I think Maddie can pick any college by now. Not that she's gonna need tuition. She's the smartest kid in school. Like her mom was. Riley was valedictorian.
Emma laughed. Yeah, I was there.
So I'm sorry, Emma. Sorry I cheated on you. I should have broken it off with you when we stopped talking, when I started hanging out with Riley. If I'd done that one thing,
well, it's all behind us now. You were forgiven a long time ago.
You okay, Emma? I heard about how bad things got for you. Anything I can do?
Nah. I have a job. I'm back in a town I know. I have a few friends.
Maybe you could count me as a friend, he said. No ulterior motives,
he said, holding up his hands. But if you need anything...
That's very nice. Thanks. Right now, I have to go. I worked all day, and seeing both you and June... By the way, Riley doesn't know I had dinner with June.
I know. Maddie said we're not exactly keeping secrets, but we're not talking about it.
Emma laughed. That was what keeping secrets was. She made a decision. She was going to tell Riley about dinner with June. If it made her angry, she'd have to get over it. Emma was relatively sure Riley wouldn't fire her. In fact, she might have to tell about Adam, too. Now for that, Riley might fire her. Jock was right. Those Kerrigans could really close ranks. But what should you expect from a family that had to stick together to survive? She shook hands with Jock, wished him luck, thanked him for making amends. By the time she got to Adam's house, it was almost 11. The front door was unlocked. He had a fire going and was nursing a drink.
"I'd almost given you up for lost," he said.
"For a little while there, I thought I was lost. My night started with your mom and Beatrice."
"I know Beatrice,"
he said with a chuckle. "And ended with Jock waiting for me so he could apologize for cheating on me. 16 years ago. Adam was tempted to beg for every moment of time Emma would spare him, to keep her close, to possess her, hold her. But he knew she had to untangle her life, and he was part of it. She said very clearly she needed to try to build her life as a woman before she thought of herself as part of a couple. Last night, in the glow of the fire, she'd asked him, "Were you too hard on Jock? Did you scare him too much? Discourage him too much? Because it turns out he always cared for Riley. I mean, I think he loved her. And he adores Maddie."
"He was an irresponsible idiot," Adam said. "Then. Back then, I mean. I know he's gotten better over time. And don't kid yourself. He's not afraid of me."
"He did a lot of stupid things," she said.
"That's an understatement."
"So did I," she said. "So did Riley. You appear to be the only perfect one."
But he'd lost his temper with Jock.
He'd hated Jock. He didn't hate him anymore, but he wasn't crazy about him. Emma went home to help Penny rake up some dead leaves in her garden, to shop for her lunch supplies for the week, to launder her uniform. But she did invite him to share a pizza and a movie later. He knew that meant he'd somehow managed to spend the night. So he planned to spend some of his Saturday checking on his mother and buying another big box of condoms. He'd had plenty of sex in his adult life. Great sex, as a matter of fact. But he'd never had a woman who wanted him like Emma wanted him. She unfolded like a rose in full bloom when he touched her. She said his name with a kind of breathy awareness that turned him on so much he was completely helpless. He'd always thought of himself as a man with great control, but he lost that with her. He teased her until she became a little wild, and then he was done for. He went crazy with her, and they blew up together. He thought he knew why it was that way with them. He was in love with her. After the weekend, Emma found herself actually looking forward to work on Monday morning, even though it was getting particularly difficult cleaning with Christmas approaching and all the decorations littering the houses. She'd never seen her own Christmas decorations looking shabby or dusty. She now realized she must have had an excellent cleaning crew. McKenna had no trainees this week, so in addition to working with Emma, Deli, and Shauna, she was visiting other teams at either Riley or Nick's request. McKenna was part of quality control.
"The Fabulous Four rides on," Shauna said of their team. "I'm glad they haven't moved you to another team, Emma. I like working with you."
"Why?"
she asked before she could think.
You're a hard worker and stay in a good mood, Shauna said.
She's still happy she got work, Deli said. She'll turn into one of us before you know it.
If I have to push someone along all day, Shauna made a face. It just puts me in a temper.
Then she launched into a litany of shortcomings about team members who didn't meet her expectations. Everything from laziness to lying. In 10 minutes, they pulled up to their first house, the Christensens. They cleaned here twice a week, but it hardly needed once. Mrs. Christensen, McKenna had informed them, knew if they missed a piece of lint or a hair on the bathroom countertop. They were here every Monday and Thursday. Emma hoped she wouldn't get the vacuum cleaner. Those tracks had to be perfect. The house was huge. This was where Bethany, the 15-year-old with the carved-up desk, lived.
How long have you been cleaning the Christensen's house? Emma asked.
I don't know, Shauna said. I've been on it a year, I think. Deli, how long?
Before Deli could answer, McKenna jumped in.
The company's been in that house 4 years now, but we've changed teams a few times. A couple of times Mrs. Christensen found the cleaning unsatisfactory, and the other times it was just time for a schedule change. New people on the job usually freshens things up.
As luck would have it, Emma was assigned the dusting, vacuuming, and linens upstairs. This time she meant to take a closer look in the bedrooms. Maybe there was a mystery to unravel. Maybe she'd spy some evidence of a visiting grandmother or another child. She'd like to at least see a picture of Bethany, the girl who threw away the expensive new clothes. The bathrooms and kitchen in this 5,000-square-foot custom home were usually fast work. Mr. and Mrs. Christensen had very demanding jobs and long hours. They didn't seem to do much cooking, and the only, even slightly challenging bathroom was the master bath. There wasn't even much kitchen trash. Since they weren't contracted to clean the refrigerator, it was against the rules to look in it. But Emma had an aching desire to know what kind of food was there. She went to vacuum and dust Bethany's room first, fiercely curious. As she started ripping off the linens, she found that the lump in the bed was Bethany. The girl shrieked, and Emma jumped back, crying out, "Oh, my God, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were in bed." Bethany grabbed for her covers. "I stayed home today." "Oh, honey, are you sick?"
"Sort of," she said, burrowing back into her bed. "Sick of school."
"Oh, can I get you anything? Call someone to look after you?"
"I'm 15. I look after myself."
"Right," Emma said. "Would you like me to skip your room?"
"Yes. Just go. And look,"
she talked from under the covers,
"just don't say anything."
She's frail, Emma thought, thin and pale and completely miserable. Who does she miss every day? She moved on to the parents' room. Why did they have a cleaning service at all? They were immaculate. She stripped the bed, applied new linens, began dusting the furniture, and heard Deli in the bathroom cleaning. She leaned against the doorframe. "Skip the girl's bathroom," Emma said softly. "She's home, sick in bed. Asked me to leave her room."
"All righty," Deli said. "I bet she's cutting school."
"No, she's sick," Emma said. Then she wondered why she was protecting the girl. She went back to dusting the bureau. A drawer was ajar an inch, and impulsively, irrationally, she pulled it open a bit. Then a bit more. And there it was. The thing that was the root of all the pain and forced order in this house. A family portrait in a frame, hidden from sight, lying atop folded clothes. Mom, Dad, and Bethany. A plumper, slightly younger Bethany, who smiled as if the very sun was inside her. They were a beautiful, happy family a few years ago. Bethany was robust, rosy, healthy. That Bethany was gone now, and in her wake, terrible pain. She closed the drawer and felt her face catch fire. Her hands shook a little while she tried to concentrate on her dusting. If anyone knew, she would be fired. She would have to be fired. What had happened to this family? Why was the only picture and evidence hidden in a drawer? Then, later, as she pushed the vacuum around the room, she realized something significant. It was the father's drawer. How strange that seemed. She could envision the father demanding all the pictures be removed and the mother clinging to one. But it was the father holding on, and the mother's assistant was buying Bethany's clothes. Emma knew without even thinking about it that the next time they cleaned, the next time she had vacuuming and dusting, she would look in the mother's drawer, look for a picture. Then she thought of her stepmother. Rosemary dispensed with Emma's father's personal effects quickly, and the pictures soon followed because less than a year after his death, Rosemary remarried. Emma kept pictures, however. So had her little sister, Lauren. The next house was a filthy mess. It took too much of their time, but it removed all that conjecture about Bethany and her family from Emma's mind for a while. McKenna left them for a while to go with Nick and check a few crews. The next house wasn't bad, but messier than usual. The lady of the house was at home because her arm was in a sling. Fell and dislocated my shoulder and might have injured my rotator cuff, but I had x-rays and it'll be fine, she explained. I'm just resting it and the doctor said to keep it immobilized for a few days. Then she laughed and said, I could have gone to work. I just can't fix my hair with one arm. Then she stayed out of the way. When they were finished and back in the van, they took a break to eat a little lunch.